I started looking at the pre-holiday classes from a different perspective. We're actually calling it Doing It Right. So this one is During Purim Right. And what I wanted to do tonight in our time is essentially look at the base halacha. Because we're familiar with the holidays in general, and of course with Purim specifically, but we don't always turn to the Shulchan Aruch, for example, for the guidance that it's supposed to give us. You know, we say that we run our lives very heavily based on the text of the Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kalim, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. So I wanted to put our money where our mouth is and show through the different ways that the holiday is presented, primarily, again, in the Shulchan Aruch and in the commentaries thereof, to see how we would go about, in the ideal form, celebrating Purim and doing Purim right. So the first source, which I gave you here, is how the holiday begins. I'm not going to go through it. It's in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos, Megillah, and Purim, Siman Tafresh, Tzadi Beis. So I gave you a little summary of Sif Dalet over here, where he talks about how if the fast is difficult, then a person can begin hearing the Megillah a little earlier in the day, but he may not eat before hearing the Megillah. Okay, this is essentially, it's really an exception to the rule. If you look at the Bir Halacha, he describes how the right time to read Megillah is at nightfall, and nightfall means after Tzeisik HaChovim, after the stars have come out. Now, of course, the normal circumstance of this is that you have a fast day leading into Purim. This year, because Purim is on Sunday, so the fast was today. But you know, after the fast, we just went home and we ate, and there was no issue because we weren't reading Megillah tonight. But ideally, the Megillah should be read after nightfall, with some exceptions, and some of them are also spelled out a little more in the Bir Halacha. A woman who is weak, or a yoledes, somebody who has given birth. I mean, the truth is that she doesn't even have to fast. Somebody who's in that category. But let's assume for a second that she did. So we would allow for the Megillah in some cases to be read a little earlier, to at least to begin reading it a little earlier. But as long as it finishes after nightfall, because Purim officially begins, it's not like Shabbos where you add time. Where you can add time at the outset, or Yom Tov, Purim begins at when the stars come out, and even though there is a discussion in the halacha as to whether not as to whether, I mean, we do say Al Nisim, I mean, in the Maariv, even though we haven't read the Megillah yet, it is officially Purim when you daven Maariv, even if you're davening Maariv a little earlier. But again, the Megillah ideally is supposed to be read after the stars come out. So, and that leads into the question of this year. So this year we have it that Purim is going to begin Saturday night, and Saturday night, owing to the fact that it's Motzei Shabbos, you're not even going to have an overlap, because you know Shabbos has to essentially end, and then Purim has to begin. But how do you do that? How do you do that? Is it something? In other words, is it appropriate? A lot of people have been sending me schedules from other shuls because they didn't like the schedule that we put out this year. But I'm going to explain why we put out the schedule the way that we did, and it's really to follow an ideal form of the halacha. How so? So now you have to look inside. Yom Chamisha Asar, so when Purim begins on Saturday night, Yom Chamisha Asar, Shechal Dios B'Shabbos, if the 15th of Adar falls out on Shabbos, now 15th of Adar, of course, is Shushan Purim, in places that observe Shushan Purim, Ein Karna Megillah B'Shabbos, we don't read the Megillah on Shabbos, Ela Magdim L'Krosa B'Erev Shabbos, but we read it on the 14th. And that follows the line of reasoning that we have in the Mishnah Megillah, that says that the Megillah can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th of Adar, Lapachas v'liyoser, not earlier and not later. But there's a gezerah when it comes to the reading of the Megillah on Purim, which is very reminiscent of the gezerah that we have about not blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. If it falls out on Shabbos, we don't read Megillah on Shabbos as well. Elamakdim in the cross of Erev Shabbos, but even in the Shushan Purim places, if Shushan Purim falls on Shabbos, they would read the Megillah on the 14th, in that case on a Friday. Okay, and he goes on to describe a number of other things related to Megillah. So take a look at the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, "Ein karna Megillah b'Shabbos." Okay, we don't read the Megillah on Shabbos. V'sholim nedarshim b'inyano shel yom. But you talk about Purim on that Shabbos. Okay, "Ein korin." Look at the Mishnah Berura, the very next source. "Tigaz Rabbanan shema yelech eitzel chacham lelamda eich likrosa v'yavi rena dalad amos brushus harabim." Okay, what's the concern? That a person is going to carry the Megillah from one place to where the Megillah reading teacher is going to be, and as a result, he's going to be carrying the Megillah, and that's a problem. So it's not about the use of the Megillah. There's nothing wrong with using the Megillah. There's nothing wrong with learning from the Megillah. Okay, you can learn from a Torah, it's made out of cloth. It's not muktzah. The concern is that you're going to be carrying it. A Torah is kept in a shul, so nobody's concerned you're going to be carrying it. Obviously, we learn from a Torah, but a Megillah, people usually have in their house, they're going to take it wherever they go. So what does that imply? That if you're in a place where there isn't where there is an Erev, rather, is there a problem with carrying a Dalet Amos? And this is a gezerah. I mean, obviously, we don't blow the shofar from Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. That's a gezerah. And I'm not suggesting that we read Megillah on Shabbos for the sake of the mitzvah of Purim. Purim for us, the Adalah, the 14th of Adar, never falls out on Shabbos. Our calendar is such that it falls out. It could fall out on Friday, it could fall out on Sunday. It doesn't fall out on Shabbos. And for most people, Purim falls out on the regular day, and we're it's never a concern. But in Israel, for example, we're in Yerushalayim, they observe Shushan Purim. So when Shushan Purim falls on Shabbos, they read the Megillah on the 14th. Okay, so I'm not suggesting that we should read the Megillah on the 14th, but on Shabbos. But the question is, can you carry a Megillah? Can you hold a Megillah on Shabbos? And the answer is, I think, absolutely, you can. You're an Arab, you can carry it, you know, as long as you're using it. If you're not using it, then you can get into the discussion about whether it's muktzah. If you're not using it, I don't even think that muktzah is the right terminology. But the point is that to reading agreed, meaning for the sake of the mitzvah of Megillah, we don't do that on Shabbos, but to possibly carry it in a situation where you have an Eruv, I don't think that's a problem. Some people...
In most shuls, they say, don't bring your Megillah.
Right, so as you're going to see in the announcements in the shul tomorrow, I'm actually giving a shiur Shabbos afternoon about the structure of the Megillah, using Megillah in hand. So it's actually necessary for the shiur. So people can bring it before Shabbos. We'll lock it up for you. Or you can bring it on Shabbos. I think it's totally fine.
The one my wife has. The one.
Yeah, bring it. That would be awesome. That would be a great visual aid, by all means.
And even though it's in a case and stuff.
Like yeah, that, yeah.
The case wouldn't be an issue.
I don't think there's any difference.
But the case you can carry.
Right. Again, you can carry a towel bag. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. So he says here, Hatam, look in the Prima Gadim. Why? Maybe the person is going to carry it. But again, with an Erev, this isn't an issue. Okay? Anyway, so that's the first point that I wanted to make with reference to, obviously, not reading the Megillah on Shabbos, but can you carry it? I think the answer is yes. Okay, turn the page. Okay? So now we get to the question of, so that's the first component. As long as the Megillah is being used on Shabbos for some other purpose, meaning not the mitzvah of Megillah reading, but for learning from it, reading from it, attending a shir that focuses on it, it's okay to use on Shabbos. I remember many times in my Megillah reading days, which still continue, practicing for the Megillah on Shabbos in my house. No problem whatsoever. Okay. Achar kriyas ha-Megillah be'arbis omer be'atah kadosh. Okay, so it says here that when it comes to the way Maariv goes on Purim evening, so we daven regular Maariv, through Shemoneh Esrei, then we read the Megillah, and then we say V'yatah Kadosh. V'im chav motzei Shabbos, Omer v'hinoam, kodem v'yatah Kadosh. Right, if it's Saturday night, then we say v'hinoam, like we normally do on a Saturday night. Okay, and then he mentions V'yitem lecha. Okay? V'korin ha-Megillah, v'yachakach mavdilin, then we read the Megillah, and then afterwards we make Havdalah. Okay, so that is the key reason for why the first Megillah reading option that we're offering in the shul this year is to follow what it says here. That there's Maariv, and in Maariv there's Havdalah, and in Havdalah that leads into Megillah. Who cares? I mean, you're going to daven Maariv, if you daven Maariv a half hour after Shabbos is over, and you're going to say Atachan Antanu in that Havdalah as well, so what's the big deal? What's the problem? The answer is, no, that's not the case. Because it is different. How so? Because if a person is going to be going home, for example, they're not going to be davening Maariv. Or they are going to be davening Maariv. Well, I mean, if they are davening Maariv, and then they're going home to pick up their family or to change into clothes. So the fact of the matter is, they've made Havdalah already. Okay? In one form or another, you've made Havdalah to the point that you're actually doing Malacha. When we say Atachan Antanu, it's true that we're allowed to do Malacha after that. But according to what we're about to see in the Mishnah Berurah here, If even if you've said Atachan Antanu, Shabbos isn't completely over for you until you make Havdalah, okay, or until you actually do Malacha. So you, as long as you're extending your Isra Malacha time period, that is considered to be an ideal form because it's Tosefes Shabbos. It's adding to Shabbos. Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. He says you should say full Kaddish after Yishmon Esrei. Okay, so different views as to which Kaddish is supposed to be said. There's another view that Eliyahu Rabbah says that you can have a full Kaddish after the Megillah reading as well, because that full Kaddish goes on the Seder Kedusha. In other words, the saying of Kadosh, 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 and Baruch Kavod Hashem, which you have in the Vyata Kadosh prayer. Uveshachris Yomar Chatzi Kaddish, Achashvana Esrei, Achash Seder Kedusha, Kaddish Shalom Tiskabel. So in the morning, so it's different. We say the half Kaddish after the Torah reading, and maybe after the Megillah as well. And then, I don't even think we do it. We do it after the Megillah reading, if I'm not mistaken. And then, but it's after the Torah reading. And then we have the Uvalot Zion in the morning, and then we say Tiskabel. Okay, Ve'omer v'yitin lecha, here's the kicker. V'motzai Shabbos achar Havdalah. That when you say v'yitin lecha, after the Havdalah is recited. V'havdalah hu achar Seder Kedusha k'mo b'shari Mos Hashanah. And when's the Havdalah supposed to be recited? After the V'yata Kadosh. U'mashakasa v'koron Megillah hu inyan b'fnei atzmo. Take a look at the next comment of the Mishnah Berurah. The Kol Mashi Yesh La Acheres Havdalah, but it's the Asayom Acherin and Lay. As much as you can extend the recitation of Havdalah with the exit of the day, in other words, with the exit of Shabbos, we do that. Now we have a similar principle, by the way, when it comes to Hanukkah. Okay, what's the rule that we have when it comes to lighting the Hanukkah candles? Okay, we actually, what do we do first in Shul? No, in Shul, we light Hanukkah candles. Why? Because in Shul, when you're going to be... Now, obviously, lighting Hanukkah candles is a malacha. There's a malacha involved. But the whole point is that you don't do Havdalah yet, because even though you're lighting Hanukkah candles, you've said Atachan and Tanos. So again, malacha is allowed, but you're extending Shabbos. You're pushing off Havdalah in Shul. And so, it's on account of that idea that you want to push off the recitation of Havdalah in Shul as much as possible. But again, to have the Megillah in association with Maariv, and Maariv is at the right time, that I wanted to offer that option to people to follow along. Maariv at the end of Shabbos, Megillah as part of Maariv, and then Havdalah after that. And so that's the first, that's one option. Then the other option is for people who want to do it a little later, so that they'll come back a little while later. Okay, it's giving an option for an ideal, which follows along the lines of the instructions of how the Megillah is supposed to be read after Shabbos. And I think as well that before the advent of the car, this was never a problem for anybody. Right? In other words, how are you getting to Shul? You're going to get to Shul, and then you'll be there, and you do what you do. And of course, by the way, after Shabbos, you've just had Shal Shudas, right? You're supposed to have a nice Shal Shudas, okay? So, and we're going to get to the meals of Purim in a second, but you just had Shal Shudas, so nobody's really in a rush to go somewhere to eat, right, sit down, hear the Megillah, it's all good.
Okay. You're going to have two readings here?
Yeah, we're having a reading, we're having Maariv, and then a reading, but a quick reading, without noise making, and then at 8 o'clock, another reading for those who want to drive.
Noise making in the first reading.
So that we can clear out the room by 8 o'clock, by 7:45, logistics. We have logistics as well, okay? All right, we're going to get to it. What? No, so I'm just v'yitin l'cha, but again, the point of the v'yitin l'cha component, I'm not saying that we say v'yitin l'cha. V'yitin l'cha is obviously a minhag. I'm not saying that we're going to do that.
This minhag has disappeared.
It hasn't disappeared. There are some shuls that do it, but it is largely gone. Yeah, largely gone. Look, when I was first married, I lived in the in Forest Hills, and the Queen Jewish Center, they said v'yitin l'cha. And for the first year, I fought it. I would run out. And then I said, where am I going? Where am I going? And then I started saying Yishmael Chal. So
for the record, we still say the Malsi.
Okay.
But Rabbi Tanrushul doesn't say.
Right, okay. Okay. Now, when it comes to the reading of the Megillah, so just getting into the question of the noise making, okay? So now, we tend to think, because we all grew up this way, that the noise making is the ikar of the Megillah. I mean, that's really what the Megillah reading is all about. But if you know the halacha, what's the rule? What's the most important rule with the Megillah reading? You got to hear every word, okay? So where does it come from to make noise? So we don't have to read it. I gave you all the sources. You have it in the Hebrew here. This is just it's just the Mishnah Berurah and the Biur Halacha. Okay, where does it come from? It comes from the custom, which he calls in the Shulchan Aruch, Minag Tov Lavik Tanim Uktanos L'Shmo Mikra Megillah. Good custom to bring little boys and little girls to hear the Megillah. Okay, and the Bir Halacha says, this is the Chafetz Chaim, he says obviously they have to be children who are of the age of Chinuch, because otherwise they disturb too much. But, and it's to train them to come to shul to hear the Megillah when they're older. In other words, how do you get kids to get to buy into the importance of the synagogue? By bringing them from a very young age. And that's a good idea. However, the different, and we'll get into this a little more when I get into this section of audience participation, okay, that we read the four verses aloud. And Mishabur mentions this here, and the Shulchan Aruch is going to mention it in a little bit. But he says, what's the reason why we do it? To teach the children about Pirsum HaNes. Right, what are the four psukim? Issue diyayav shushan b'ra. You got to know who this guy Mordechai is. Right, Mordechai yatzal melufnei melech b'vush machus. You see, Mordechai goes out with royal clothing because Mordechai is trying to convince everybody that his law needs to be followed and not Haman's law needs to be followed. Yehudim ha'isar v'simcha v'sasum yikar. And these are important messages to give over to children. And last pasuk of the Megillah, ki Mordechai yudimish nelamelech Achashverosh. You see, Mordechai is risen in Achashverosh's kingdom, and therefore it's such a beautiful story. It's an amazing thing which was accomplished. So we keep the kid. We keep the kids awake through doing that. Okay, that's the idea that he says. The orer aktanim shelo yishenu. Right, it's sometimes it's late in the Megillah reading. It's something which could be very boring if the kids don't understand it and they're just looking for the opportunity to say these psukim. So look at the way that they're spread apart. Where's the first one? Mordechai yitzal mufnei melech. Excuse me. Ishu diayav shishana b'ira. Where is that? It's at the beginning of the second chapter. So, good chance the kids are going to be awake for the first chapter. Second chapter, few psukim in, Mordechai. Then what kicks in the third chapter? The first recitation of Haman. Okay, and Haman carries us through into chapter 7, when Haman is killed. Haman is mentioned a little bit in chapter 8 as well, after he's dead. Doesn't really appear in chapter 9. What do we have in chapter, the end of chapter 8, beginning of chapter 9? Mordechai yatzal melufnei melech b'levush machos, la'yudim ha'isar v'simcha v'sasum yikar. So, Haman's gone, but now we have these two psukim, so everybody's awake, and then we have the 10 sons of Haman, so everybody's awake, then Haman's mentioned a few more times after the 10 sons of Haman, and then it's the last pasuk of the Megillah, and everybody's anticipating. So, with all this, this is how you keep the kids engaged and the kids awake. Okay? But what is he, look what he says from in the fourth box here. Mishnah Brura, Simon Tafresh Peites, Sivkat Niches, he says, Bavanosein HaRabim, Nafochu! Okay? It's like he takes the line from Purim, we're all familiar with, everything switched over on its head, and he says, but it's just totally thrown over. What is it? Nowadays, the kids, they don't even listen to Megillah, okay? What do? They disturb. What's it about? It's not about hearing the story, it's not about hearing about Mordechai and Esther, it's not about hearing about the narrative and the crazy Nafochu story that's in the Megillah. It's about, did he say Haman? Ah! And bang, 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 bang. And so he says, this is not chinuch. It's a free-for-all crazy place. What it needs to be is that a parent takes a child and says, sit down, listen. When it's your turn to make a little noise, you make a noise. When the pasuk is there that you were going to recite, you're going to say the pasuk. But not to make the whole thing all about the noise which is being made. Look at the next comment in the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, he says everyone should have their own Megillah to read along quietly, and we say that even if you don't have your own Megillah, you should have a text of the Megillah to read along quietly, because on account of all the noise that everyone's making, the people whose focus is on the noise making, you're gonna miss a word. And what's more important, to make noise at Haman, or to hear every single word? It's to hear every single word. And so it's this focus which is incorrect, so much so that there are debates which are recorded amongst the authorities, and the Magen Avraham, which we're going to see on the next page, is he mentions a number of different viewpoints. But through history, the Nosei Kalim, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, say that there were rabbis in different communities, some who were of the view that this is what you do during Haman. You just bang your foot a little bit, just like, you know, for the sake of it. Where does that even come from? We're going to get to that in a second. And others said, no, you shouldn't be making any noise whatsoever. There's a Sephardic custom, when do you make noise in Haman? Arur Haman, that's the only time you make noise in Haman. Not during the entire Megillah. Because of the Iker Mitzvah, the main mitzvah when it comes to reading the Megillah, is to hear every single word.
In the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, that's the
okay, right, so that's...
Not peak.
Right, and that's the way, that's my ideal form of reading the Megillah. And that's what we're going to be doing, the first Megillah reading, Saturday night. Okay, so now you turn to the page where it says audience participation. So where does this idea come from, even just to stamp the feet? So there's a pasuk, Shem Rishayim Yirkav, that the names of the wicked need to be wiped out. On account of that verse, so the children has the custom, and this is what he has in Sif Yud Zayin, the custom was to draw like a picture of Haman or sticks on stones and to write his name and to knock them together to erase his name to fulfill that verse. And sometimes they'd write on the bottom of their shoes, and when you write on the bottom of your shoe, you walk around or you stop it, what's going to happen with that writing? It's going to get erased. And this is where it all comes from. Okay? Now, he concludes in the Ramah where he says that where is it? It's the very last line. Ein levatel shum minog olilol galav. Don't nullify any minog or makit bikilol lachina mukbo, because they weren't created for nothing. There's something to it. It's not something that should be looked upon and said, ah, that's ridiculous. Where does it come from? Okay. Now, and the truth is that we value minog so much that there are some cases where we'll even have a minog which goes against halacha. I don't remember the example which he brings here, but in some cases a minog is so strong that it goes. I mean, look, in the opposite direction. We have in the Ashkenazi community, we have a minog when it comes to on Pesach, which really goes against halacha. Not in a violation of halacha sense, but the whole everything related to kitnios. It's a minog, okay. And we're very strong about it. So much so that we'll freak out if somebody brings a piece of rice into our house, but we'll forget to check the air conditioning to see if there's Cheerios inside. Okay. Anyway. I'm just kidding. I once heard this story about this guy. He went to his Rebbe's house. He went to his Rebbe's house on Pesach, and the Rebbe was everything clean. The house was clean and everything. And then the one of those wall unit air conditioning kicks on at one point in time in the Seder, and Cheerios comes flying out of it from some of the, a kid had stuck it in there, which was just one of those, you could only laugh at a story like that. But anyway, so look at what the Mishnah Berurah says over here. Middle box number 60. Okay, this is Simon Tafresh Sadi Samach, Mishnah Berurah. He says that when the kids are making noise, or when the people are making noise during Haman, you should actually read a pasuk or two ahead, because you're not going to hear the chaza. Okay? Just in advance, because you're not going to hear the Baal Kriya. Okay, so in order not to
speak, yeah, doesn't the Baal Kriya always read or warn?
Yeah, but there's the schnook next to you who gets one more grogger thing in there, one more cap that they shoot,
yeah,
one more boo.
Yeah, but you normally start a word or two before the Haman, right?
Or you repeat it.
Or you repeat it, but he's suggesting that there is a chance if it's a bigger room or something is going to happen. Look, the only reason why I hear every word of the Megillah, because I'm reading it, okay? But I know at times when I'm reading that even after I continue going, that I'll hear a grogger or I'll hear somebody make noise. It's almost impossible when you're dealing with people who don't follow the set decorum that you have, which is, yes, there's a time to make noise and then, for a second or two and then stop. And when you have kids, that's gonna be the name of the game. It's going to happen. Nothing you can do about it. Okay? So here comes the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, it's true. Customs should not be canceled. However, if the whole reason for the custom is lost, then it can be changed. Okay? We have something in Jewish life, which is called a minhag tos. A minhag which came about from mistaken reasoning. I'll give you a dumb example. I remember hearing this story about this community. It could be an apocryphal story, I don't know. But about this community where their custom was that they only wear loafers or chaps. No tied shoes. Okay, that's their custom. Where did that come from? Ah, a gzera on a gzera, because maybe the lace would break and somebody may pick it up. But nobody, there's no such gzera that you can't wear a laced shoe. It doesn't exist. So why were they doing that? Because they didn't want to come to the point that maybe somebody might have to carry a shoelace, and so therefore. But that's not a custom. That's a minhag tos. You don't have to follow that as a custom. So similarly here, he says, what's the whole reason for the making of the noise? Shem Rishayim Yirkav. You have to wipe out the name. But if that's not the reason why people are doing it, if the whole thing that they're doing now is to make noise because, yay, it's supposed to make noise during the Megillah. No, incorrect. You're not supposed to be making noise during the Megillah. It's the wrong practice. And he says, if that's the case, then, yeah, and again, he mentions a number of different views as to whether it's appropriate or not appropriate to make noise during Haman. But he says there's a significant difference between a custom established by old wise men and one which has no source in the Torah is probably a result of bad judgment. And I think that when it comes to the custom to make noise during the Megillah, owing to the, I mean, there's no comparison between the need to hear every word, which is a mitzvah, and the custom to make noise. Where does that even come from? And he says it's the whole reasoning for it has totally been lost. Because of what we've seen up until now. I mean, I've been building the case because he built the case. He essentially says that the kids, they've taken it to such an extreme that the focus has completely been lost and therefore it's inappropriate. So this is why I'm a big advocate for noiseless Megillah readings, because the halacha is very clear. You need to hear every word. It's not very clear that you need to make noise during the recitation of, during when Haman's name appears.
Did you ever think you didn't this year at a yeshiva?
Okay. Yeah, I've read Megillah in schools, and it is sometimes very, 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 very difficult. Very difficult because you're dealing with kids. All right, last year I'll give chops to Hebrew Academy in Miami Beach. I read Megillah there last year. They were amazing. That one of the rabbis said, "Can we do this without a microphone?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? It's a huge auditorium." I said, "I'll do it, but if it doesn't work, then I need the microphone back." The kids were amazing. They were fantastic. Really, I still remember it as a positive experience. It's just very rare when it comes to doing it in schools. But yeah, that was good. Okay, so we move on to the next set of mitzvahs, and of course the other mitzvahs of the day when it comes to Purim are, after we get through Megillah, are Matanos Levion and Mishloach Manos and the meal of Purim. They all begin with M. Mishloach Manos, Matanos Levionim, and meal. And Megillah. Okay. And Megillah, of course. No, I was in a school. In a school, they once said, Mishteh. Okay, Mishteh. Oh, we call it a Suda. So, anyway. So, anyway. Din Maos Purim La'ani. And this is Simon Tafresh Tzadi Dalid in the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, Chai Pa'al Mutan Vachos, Shtei Matanos L'Shnei Aniyim. Okay, that you have to give two presents to two poor people. Okay, and he also mentions the minhag of Machetzis HaShekel, which is recorded. Where that money goes is a different conversation. It's supposed to mimic the Machetzis HaShekel of the Torah, which of course went towards the Bedek HaBayis and to fixing up the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. So I think the best usage of the Machetzis HaShekel is for the sake of the shul, for local Bedek HaBayis or for paying off a debt or whatever it may be. Okay, that's my view on this in light of certain realities. But in any case, when it comes to Matanos Levionim, so it's two gifts to two people. So who are the people that you can give it to? So the Mishnah Berurah explains. He says, Kol Adam Bein Ish Bein Isha, whether who's obligated? Every man and every woman has this obligation. Even a poor person has the obligation. He needs to give from what he receives, a small percentage, or a gift. Okay. The next point that is raised here is that what is the minimum? Rashad litein machal o maos. You can give food. You can give money, and there's no limit on what you can give. Skip to the next Mishnah Berurah, Gimel, Shtei Matanos, he says, Zeu Medina, you have to give two gifts, which I think is defined, I saw it elsewhere, but I'm not finding it right now, where it has to be that you give to two people, each you give one gift. In other words, one person one gift, and one person another gift, and that's the definition of Shtei Matanos L'Shnei Aniyim. Okay, but he says that if you can do more, great, Tavo Lecha Bracha, that's the way it should be. Rabbi Yaroslavich, who was here on Monday, talked about, I mean, I guess it was a little musari, the comment that he was making, that there are some people who run away from their homes in wherever they are because they're known to be a giving home. And so he says they come to Florida so they don't have to be bothered by it. He says that's not what Matanos Levionim means on Purim. On Purim, it's called poshet yad. Anybody who sticks a hand out, they're supposed to be given. And generally speaking, that's not something that we're... maybe some people are trained to do it. But on Purim, it has to be an automatic. And the halacha is very clear that you should be ready and willing to give. Now, it doesn't mean you have to give away all your money. If you want to carry around a pocket full of coins, a pocket full of $1 bills, then be prepared to give away $100 on Purim. That's not so crazy. Are you really going to meet 100 aniyim over the course of Purim? Again, is a dollar very helpful? I don't know. But if a lot of people give a person a dollar, they get some money out of it, and it's something which is nice. Even better, he says you can give food. And that doesn't have to constitute your mishloach manos. We're going to get to mishloach manos in a second. But matanos leviyona means literally giving gifts. Some even say you can give clothing, you can give other types of items, which would be good for their purposes. So just remember that matanos leviyona means gifts, and it doesn't automatically mean money. And that's a good attitude to have when it comes to seeing how we go about to do this. Yes, but Santa may give you coal. Okay. Right. Okay. All right. Take a look at the next page. So, if Bays. Okay. Ein mishani ma'os Purim letzedaka acheres. You're not taking money for Purim for another tzedakah. In other words, it has to be. If it's designated for Matanas Levyonim, it needs to be given out as Matanas Levyonim. And who's in charge to make sure that happens? Look at the Ramah. He says, V'davka hagaboy, avalani yachol lasos bo mashi yirtzeh. The poor person can do whatever he wants with it, but it's the gabbai who has to make sure that it's given to the people who it's designated for. Take a look at the very bottom of the page. Gimel, emidakta mimos purim el kol mishposhet yado. We cannot be stingy on Purim. Anybody who reaches out a hand, we have to be prepared to give. And that's the halacha. And even if to non-Jews, we should be giving as well if they are around. If there are no poor people, then a person can designate their matanos levyonim monies to say, I'm going to give them to a poor person when I come across one. And so it's set aside and it's available. And that, in general, is a good idea when it comes to tzedakah giving, to have an account designated for tzedakah, and you're always putting money in, and the only money that goes out is to poor people. It's a good policy to have. Okay? And, all right, so that's what I wanted to say about Matanas HaGivim. Let's turn the page. Now we're up to Mishloach Manos. Okay, so Mishloach Manos is a little iffy in the sense of what is the definition of Mishloach Manos? And nowadays, Mishloach Manos is talk about a custom that has completely gotten out of hand. Okay, what is Mishloach Manos now about?
Years ago, when we were growing up, it was a piece of cake and a candy or a fruit.
Right. Okay, so we're going to see that. We're going to see that. Exactly. So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch on the top right. This is Siman Tafresh Sadi Hei Siv Dalet. Chayav l'shloach chaver shtei manos basar, o shel minei ochlim. Shneimar mishloach manos ish l're'eu shtei manos li'ish echad. You have to give manos. Manos is plural, two items, and so there should be two things. So obviously, if it's two items of meat, that's going to be one bracha. So it doesn't have to be two brachas, but that is certainly one of the views out there. V'chalamar l'shloach l're'eu mishubach. So what is it nowadays? It's not about sending food. It's about having a theme. Right, what's the Shlach Manos today? Is it a magic theme? Is it a bowling theme? Is it a movie theme? This is, you know, the things that I've seen. Listen, we lived in Hollywood for a number of years, and everybody has a theme. My kids' theme is, we're giving you a meal, because that's what I told them to give. So what have they been doing for you? What are you guys doing this year? Same thing? Okay, so up until this year, they would give a hot dog in a bun and a can of soda and maybe a bag of potato chips. That's what they give it to their friends, and here's your Mishloach Manos, and that's what we did. It was a lot of fun cooking all the hot dogs. Fantastic.
But that gives you different brachos.
Right. No. But the point is that it's really, this is the next part. Okay. Now, by the way, im ein lo, this is my favorite part of Mishloach Manos. Okay. Im ein lo, if you don't have a lot of people to give to, then machlif im chavero. It says, I give you your shalach manos, my shalach manos, and you give me my shalach manos. So we've each fulfilled our mitzvah. Shkayach shalom al Yisrael. Zeh shalach, zeh sudaso, So each one gives a meal. But you see, a meal, it has to be something which you can make like a real meal. And that's why it has to be prepared and ready. Okay, and the Rama says it needs to be done in the day and not in the nighttime. It's not a mitzvah. All the mitzvahs except for the Megillah reading are done in the daytime, except for the first Megillah reading. Obviously, we read Megillah twice. And he has rules about modesty in terms of who can give to whom. A woman should give to a woman, a man should give to a man, and not otherwise. And he says, what would happen if a man sends shalach manas to a widow? It could be a suffix kiddushin. So you got to be very careful about that. Okay, which is, you know.
Doesn't he have to make a bracha?
What?
He could do kiddushin without a bracha.
If he has in mind when he's giving her a gift, yeah.
Something worth $10.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we always say, what's the ring worth? A pruta. It has to be worth nothing. Okay? So, anyway, look at the Mishnah Berurah, just chaf. He says, Minei Ochlin, that Mishloach Manos is food, velo begadim, ushari dvarim. Okay? And it can't be clothing or other things. Within mashket. And the same rule applies, meaning it could be drinks as well. It could be food or drink. The Shabbat Dhamma, Dishsiya Bechlal Achila, drinking is considered part of eating. Okay, look at the next line. Uve'inyan Shiyeh Min Ochel HaMavushal V'lo Basar Chai. It should be food which is cooked and not raw meat. The Mishloach Manos HaRo'i Miyad LaAchila Mashma. It has to be something which is ready to be eaten now. Some say that you can give raw meat because it's ready to be cooked. You know, it's as long as it's ready now. Like, giving a cow is not good, but giving meat that's been salted and that's ready to be thrown on the grill, then maybe that's okay. Okay, I was doing the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch with some of the kids in the shul today, and so we discovered there. He says that there is a custom. Some people they give sweets and candies, like you were saying, cake. And he says, that's appropriate. I didn't think that was appropriate, but according to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it is appropriate. I've told my kids that you have to give the person a meal. And when I was living in Hollywood, a friend of mine gave me a beer and a bagel. And I ate it for lunch. That was it. That was my Purim Suda, but I ate it for lunch. There was a meal. And that's fine.
But that's not good, because beer is the same of bracha that might be a bagel.
No, baruch ata beer, baruch ata basoda.
Aren't they both?
Oh, come on, that was a good joke. That was my grandfather's joke. Or bracha did he make on beer, or bracha did he make on soda. That was quick, thinking on my feet. Maybe he didn't give me a beer, I don't remember. It sounded good. Okay, all right, everybody's obligated to give, men and women. Okay, that's fine. Let's look at Seudas Purim. Seudas Purim. Okay, so Seudas Purim, look at the top line in the Shulchan Aruch we have, Tafresh Tzadi Hei. He says, the Rama actually says, Mitzvah laharbos b'su'udas purim u'v'su'uda achas yotzim. So it's a mitzvah to have much in terms of the su'udas purim, and you only need to have one meal. Su'udas purim shasa b'layla lo yotzei dechavasa. If you have a su'uda in the nighttime, that doesn't fulfill your obligation. We come welcome gam b'layla yismach v'yarbeh k'tzas b'su'uda. But nonetheless, in the nighttime, you should be joyous and have a lot in terms of a su'uda. Now, of course, in most cases in Purim, that's pretty easy. Right? Because what has just happened? You fasted. And so you're going to have a meal of some kind, which is going to be significant because of that reality. So the challenge becomes, take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, Gimel, V'arbek tzas p'suda, v'afilu kishachala yudal b'motzoi Shabbos. Even when the 14th is on Motzoi Shabbos, when you haven't been fasting, da'as ha'suda chashuva d'v'suda shlishis, you just had a shal shudas, and maybe you're full. You should still make something special, something a little nicer in honor of Purim. But it's not like the meal that you're going to be having the next day. The meal of the next day, that is Seudas Purim, and there are rules associated with how to do it, when to do it. If Purim is on a Friday, you do it earlier in the day. If Purim is not on Friday, then you could do it later in the day, and it could even spill over into Shushan Purim, that's fine. But as long as the bulk of the Seuda takes place on Purim day as well. And he even describes how Denachon Lebosh Big Day Shabbos Gam Ken Mi Ba'erev, that it's appropriate to wear Shabbos clothes on Purim evening, which is obviously easy when Purim is on Shabbos, when Purim is on Mitzvah Shabbos, but to wear Shabbos clothes in honor of Purim. He basically is describing how you set up for Shabbos. You have candles lit, you have a set table, the bed is made very nicely, clean sheets, whatever it may be. That's how he's describing what Purim is supposed to look like. It, I mean, we tend to think of it because Melacha is permitted in every way, that that Purim is like a weekday. But he's saying, no, Purim is Yantiv. Purim is Yantiv, we should be treated like Yantiv. People should dress nicely, we should dress the way they do for Shabbos, and such. Yes?
We're always taught that as long as you washed and made a motzi, you know, when it was still daylight or whatever, that the suda can just...
Right. It could go on, but you shouldn't be starting 5 minutes before Shkia.
Right.
You should start, you know,
as
start...
As
right. Listen, if it goes for 5 hours, great. But as long as the bulk of it, I mean, if you start, like we start at 5 o'clock, when's Shkia? 6:30 or so.
Well, now with the change of the clock,
it's going to be, you're right, we're changing the clock. So it's going to be 7:30. Okay, so we're obviously starting. So even if we were to go till 9 o'clock, but clearly, clearly the bulk of the meal is before Shkia. I mean, 2 hours is more than enough time for a nice meal. Okay, two more things that I wanted to look at. One of them is the custom of the practice. I don't know what it's called custom, but it's actually in the Ramah. The Ramah talks about it, of dressing up on Purim. And when I say dressing up, that's despite what I just said a second ago about wearing Shabbos clothes. Okay, so the Ramah, this is all the Ramah in Simon Tafresh Tzadi Vav towards the end. He says, "Mashenagul lilbosh partzufim bePurim." There was a custom for people to wear masks on Purim. The gever lovesh simlas isha, and a man would wear a woman's dress. Isha klei gever, and a woman would wear men's accoutrements. Ein iser b'davar me'achasha ein mechavdim el simcha b'yamar. He says there's no prohibition since their only intent is for joy. V'chein b'levishas kilayim derabanan, and even to wear kilayim derabanan. Okay, kilayim deoraisa is a Torah prohibition. V'kilayim derabanan, he says, that's okay. And however, there are those who say that it's forbidden to do all these things. But the custom is to do the first one, which is to be lenient. People who like take things or they take things from one another as a joke. It's not a problem of stealing. But as long as they're not breaking the rules of appropriate behavior, according to those who establish those rules. Okay, now you have to look at the Nosei Kelim on this. I didn't give them to you, but there actually is a big debate amongst the authorities whether it's appropriate for men to wear women's clothing and for women to wear men's stuff, because it is a Torah prohibition. I mean, the pasuk does say v'gever. What is it? Lo silbash simlas isha. Lo yechli gever al lo yechli gever al isha. Whatever it is, the pasuk in Devarim that talks about that. And so it is a Torah prohibition. So yes, it's a joke, but you have to understand. I spoke about this in shul a few nights ago. That what is the reason for the prohibition? Because it may come to create intermingling, which is inappropriate. But here, if everybody knows it's a joke and everybody knows that's Chaim Yankel and he's wearing a dress and he's not going into the ladies' room, then it's not a violation of the prohibition in the biblical sense. And so that's why there's the leniency. Is it appropriate? You know, we can have an awe about it. There are obviously different views about it, but clearly the Ramah says Hamina Kesvar Rishona, that the custom is like the first view, which was permissive about it. Okay, the last thing which I wanted to address is the question of drinking. Okay, the Ramah, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Shulchan Aruch rather quotes the Gemara that says Chai Vinish Lubasume Bepuraya. And what does it mean a person has to Lubasume Bepuraya? That's a very good question. Most people are of the view that it means that you need to get drunk on Purim until you don't know the difference between Aruham and Baruch Mordechai. Now what is Aruham and Baruch Mordechai? So there are a lot of different interpretations as to what that means, that not knowing the difference between Aruham and Baruch Mordechai. For example, if you look at the Be'er Hagola, he says, Yesh Meforshim Shebaruch Mordechai V'Aruham and Chush B'nei Didein K'Chush B'nei Didein. They have the same gematria. V'Shetzarech Lishtos Kol Kach Ad Shelo Yedeh L'Chavein HaMispar. That you have to drink enough that you can't do the math anymore. To see that Aruham and Baruch Mordechai have the same gematria. Okay, that's one view. Another view is that you don't know the difference between the value of Aruham and Baruch Mordechai, not gematria-wise, but which one is better, which one's more important. If you don't know the difference, so how do you not know the difference? If you're a little drunk, you don't know which one's better, Aron HaKohen or Baruch Mordechai. But you don't need to be a little drunk to realize, you don't need to be a little drunk to have that challenge of knowing which one is more important and which one's less important, because they're both relatively equal in the sense of you want Haman to go down and you want Mordechai to be blessed. So what is it instead? What is it instead? So he says that the Rama says, he's quoting the Rambam, says V'yesh Amud Ein Tzarich L'Shtaker Kol Kach, you don't need to get drunk. Ella yishte yoser mi limudo v'yishan. That you should drink a little more than you normally do, and that you should take a nap. And this is what's going on?
I'm showing you a picture of you.
Ah, very nice. Okay, good. So you should drink a little more. You should drink a little more than you normally do, and you should take a nap. Okay, because when you're what's the word? Inebriated? Is that the right word? So when you're out of sorts, you don't know the difference anyway. So that's a good way to do it. Now, needless to say, I mean, take a look. If you look, the next source which I gave you is a photograph from a book which I have, Mikrai Kodesh, in which in Tesvav he says a person should drink to the point of not knowing the difference between Aron and Baruch Mordechai. He says Yesh. So it's on the bottom right of the upper text on page Kuftzadi Reish. Kuftzadi, that doesn't make sense. Kuftzadi Dalet. Yesh Omrim Shadayin Yishtei Yayin Yotzer Meher Galo. Some say it's enough to drink a little more than you normally do. Acherim Omrim Shiyotzi Dechova Im Yishtei Yayin Yotzer Meher Galo. That some say you have to drink a little more than you normally do, and then you can fall asleep. And that's actually the halacha. Mikomakom, he says, Yesh liyizar shemitoch shechrusa lo yishkach litol yadav lesuda. The concern with the drinking is that you may come to forget to wash. Levarech is birkas al matis daim, or to make a bracha on your washing, or the bracha of amotzi, or birkas amazon, or benching, or the kayim ashar mitzvahs karoi, or fulfill all other mitzvahs. So if a person is going to get drunk and neglect other Jewish responsibilities which they have, so that's clearly inappropriate. What I gave you here at the very end of this is a number of articles against drinking on Purim, so much so that there are many who make the argument that nowadays drinking on Purim is absolutely usur. There is a debate, actually something which I saw, which was very disturbing in the Ramah, where he says that, you know, the custom is that if you do a little bit of damage to somebody's house, that you don't have to pay for it. A lot of damage, the Mishnah Berurah says, a lot of damage, yeah, but a little damage, you don't have to pay for it. Okay, I'm like, I don't understand that at all. If you look at the article here, the first article that I gave you, this is by Shlomo Brody, where he starts off telling the story about how when he was in yeshiva for the first time, he got drunk, and he doesn't remember what happened, but he knows that it involved vomiting on the wall in the teacher's house, and that he later dated a student of that teacher, or maybe married the student of that teacher, which became a little awkward. Okay, or maybe, I don't remember exactly what it was. You can read it. It was a Jewish press article from a couple of years ago. And but he goes through the different sources and analysis to essentially say that there's a lot of wrong involved in drinking. And I'll make the argument just on a very simple level. There's nothing in Jewish life that allows for people to get drunk and to lose themselves, to lose control completely. Yes, yain samach levav enosh, right? Wine helps a person rejoice, yes. But drinking is what the Ramban called the novel birshus haTorah. You're becoming disgusted with the permission of the Torah. The Torah allows you to drink wine and says, rejoice with wine, no problem. But to get drunk, we see from the story in the Gemara Megillah that follows the declaration of Chayiv Inish Lebesumei, where Rabba and Rabbi Zera have this strange tale in the meal which they have, in which there's a suggestion made that the Rabbi Zera may have died, even though some of the commentaries on the Gemara don't believe that he died, but nonetheless, it looks that way from the Gemara, and it's just demonstrating that that drinking is not a very good thing, and I think that even more so today, on account of the fact that we have cars, and we know what people who have been drinking. What they can do once they get behind a wheel, or even people just walking around drunk when other people are minding their own business driving normally. You can get somebody who's drunk just fall into the street, and they don't even realize what's going on, and all the kinds of accidents. We hear about this every single year, the terrible things which happen, and people who get alcohol poisoning because they don't understand limits. It's really a machlet. It's such a chil Hashem at this point in time. I think even the chil Hashem aspect on its own should be enough to say, okay, you have a cup of wine, that's fine, that's enough. That's the fulfillment of your day, a little more than you normally do. If you don't normally drink wine during the week, you're having a little bit during the week, Shkoyach Shalom Yisrael. So we should bear that in mind. You, I don't think we have a big drinking problem in the shul here, so it's good. But nonetheless, if this talk ever gets anywhere, let it be said that that's what it was. So hopefully through what hopefully through the things that we've seen, we get a better glimpse of how to do Purim right and all the mitzvahs of the day, how to begin Purim correctly, how to read the Megillah, how to hear the Megillah, how to not hear the Megillah, how to do Mishloach Manos, Matanos Lavionim, and of course the Seudah of the day. Yeshu Kach, and I thank you very much for coming.
You can't get drunk. Well,
my son was.